League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Tottenham's story is this. It's time to change the situation if Tottenham wants to change.
I love to win, mate. That's the main thing. Hopefully I can fulfill those dreams and aspirations of every Tottenham supporter.
And still Ricky Villa. What a fantastic run. He scored.
That's going on to have a crack. He is, you know. Oh,
it's a record.
Here's Lucas Moura.
Oh, they've done it.
I'm loving big engines instead. Guess I'm a Spurs fan now then.
Hello, everybody. It's good to be back after a little mid-season break made possible by Spurs not playing at the weekend. I'm Marcus Buckland in the company of the Evening Standard's Dan Kilpatrick and Tom Allnutt of The Times, who had their focus on Sunday's League Cup final. Both were at Wembley. It's a match that is going to be remembered for a long time to come. Poor old Poch. What a shame for Chelsea as Jurgen Klopp's kids beat the Blues billion-pound bottle jobs. And we must give Gary Neville some credit for that particular label. We'll have a few thoughts on that in just a moment. Plus, with 3 months of the season to go, we're going to do a little Tottenham squad audit. Tom Allnutt's come up with an interesting little exercise for us. We're going to have a certain amount of money that we can spend in the summer, but that is dependent on who we sell before we buy. Hopefully it'll all become clear in just a moment. And we'll also look ahead to the weekend, the home game against Crystal Palace. Really important match, of course, after the disappointment of losing to Wolves the weekend before. By the way, I watched Wolves yesterday against Sheffield United. They were terrible. Seriously bad. And you're thinking, my God, is that the same team that played lights out football at Tottenham? And I appreciate it was a totally different game. And Wolves on the counter-attack are superb. But they were so bad yesterday. They made Sheffield United look like world beaters. And yet somehow they won the game. Of course, the good news, Spurs, is that Manchester United slipped up at the weekend. So we still have a three-point lead over them. And I think it's going to be a very interesting battle between us, United and Aston Villa, for that all-important fourth place. So lots to sink our teeth into. But first things first, Dan, you were at Wembley. I know you had your eyes trained on Mauricio Pochettino, who once more suffers domestic disappointment. And oh dear, oh dear. Playing against the Liverpool under-11s, that is going to take some getting over, isn't it?
Yeah, hi, Marcus. Yeah, I mean, it was obviously the result I think the vast, vast majority of Spurs fans, if not all Spurs fans, wanted. So yeah, definitely one we can get into a bit on this podcast. Yeah, it was a funny one from Chelsea's point of view. I just thought they looked like the stronger team going into extra time. Then they froze, really, against, as you said, like a heavily depleted Liverpool side. There's really no excuse, I think, for Chelsea not beating that Liverpool side or not taking the game to that Liverpool side in extra time. I mean, Poch made the point afterwards that they were still the younger team. But Chelsea's young players cost many millions of pounds. And Chelsea are young by design, right? Liverpool were young by necessity. You know, all their senior players were either injured or had gone off. So a really tough evening for Poch. And I think that Gary Neville line you referenced kind of threatens to hang over this Chelsea team now. I mean, you could easily imagine it being their kind of tagline for the foreseeable future. And that's obviously not what Poch wanted, given the jibes from his time at Spurs. So, yeah, a big result, I think, for his kind of medium and potentially long-term future at Chelsea and not in a good way.
Well, we'll come on to his future in a moment because I know you are penning an article that may appear in The Standard in a couple of days' time and may make for quite uncomfortable reading for Pochettino. But, Tom, before we try and attribute all the blame, I think a lot of the credit has to go as well to Jurgen Klopp, who, as Dan mentioned, he took off a couple of his senior players towards the end of normal time. And I don't know how many other managers would have been brave enough to do that. And I've had a few issues with Klopp. And I also thought that Klopp actually was out of order by not shaking hands with the referee at the end of the match, which was a real shame after everything else. But, I mean, that was astonishing. Did you get the feeling, though, that it was just meant to be for all sorts of different reasons that Chelsea's, you know, ridiculously expensive squad was just meant to lose to these youngsters?
I was going to say, Marcus, that you were being very noble and magnanimous there, but you just couldn't resist a little dig, could you, into the old Klopp rivalry.
I couldn't.
I agree with that, actually. I noticed that with the referee, and I thought it was a bit... I don't know if I'm sort of too sympathetic in these kind of things, but I sort of thought that referee probably thought, what a privilege to referee what possibly could be Klopp's last thing at Wembley. And I don't know. I mean, I guess refs are used to it, but I didn't think it was necessary. Yeah, it was definitely a bad day. Great day for Liverpool, obviously, but we're not the Liverpool podcast. It was a bad day for Chelsea. We're not the Chelsea podcast either. But it is interesting on Pochettino. Me and Dan were just talking before we came on about, you know, how much this kind of Chelsea experience could kind of harm his kind of status as a coach, I guess, in Europe. And it did feel after Spurs and even after PSG that he kind of was in the mix for these kind of super clubs, you know. And I just wonder, I guess, you know, I still think there's a lot of road to run. You know, he could yet turn this around at Chelsea, and next season could be a different season, you know. Let's see what happens in the summer. But as it stands, it would be difficult to kind of see Poch jumping off this Chelsea job and going into the hands of a top three or four team in Europe. Maybe he might have to kind of drop down to the kind of second bracket again. But, you know, I've always thought it was a mad thing for him to go to Chelsea. I really did think that right from the beginning. I always thought, you know, the word you heard from Pochettino's kind of camp was he came out of PSG. And what he wanted was a sensible project, was somewhere he could kind of build again, where he trusted the owners, where he felt that he could kind of bed in and you know, do what he did at Spurs, I guess. So why would then you choose Chelsea? I just don't understand that. And it still baffles me now to think that, you know, you would go from PSG, which is undoubtedly the craziest club of the last 10 years, to Chelsea, who are probably going to be the craziest club of the next 10 years, you know. And I just thought, in terms of career planning, that was a strange move. Let's see, there's still time, but as it stands, he's in a bit of trouble.
Well, I suppose he would say that his options were limited in the summer, and ultimately that was the best job available. I mean, it's probably a bit early, Dan, is it not, to write him off? He got them to a cup final. Admittedly, they had a very straightforward run and got a little bit of luck, and of course their league form is terrible, but do you get the sense that Chelsea are about to pull the ripcord? And if they do, where do you think that would leave Pochettino as far as his long-term plans are concerned?
I don't think he's under any immediate danger from what I hear, but they've got Leeds at home in the FA Cup on Wednesday night. Obviously a massive game and a real potential banana skin. Leeds hate Chelsea, Chelsea hate Leeds. And if they lose that game, then, you know, suddenly their season's kind of over before the start of spring for a second year running. And you could easily imagine them unravelling in the league running with nothing to play for, potential Conference League place on the line, which excites nobody at the club. So I do think that's a massive game for Poch's future potentially. And you can well imagine, you know, let's say if they didn't win that and then they kind of hobbled through to the end of the season, that he might go in the summer. I mean, why not? I don't think there's any kind of plans to sack him immediately, particularly given what happened with Lampard last season and then the kind of lack of obvious alternatives around. But I think losing that game on Wednesday night, you know, would potentially have, you know, long-term ramifications unless Chelsea had a really strong end to the season. But let's see. And yeah, Tom's sort of nicked my point, really, I think. But that's what I was going to write about this week, possibly. You know, what kind of, where do we see Poch now in the sort of hierarchy of top European managers? I mean, without winning anything at Spurs, he had kind of put himself into that elite bracket, and he was being linked with Real Madrid and Manchester United, and it looked like, you know, his next job would be a top job. I think he's made two slightly strange calls, as Tom says, and now suddenly I think if he did leave Chelsea, let's say at the end of the season or even before, he would probably have to go and build from the bottom again at a kind of more modest mid-level club. Tom and I were talking about maybe one of the big Italian clubs might go for him. Atletico Madrid feel like a good-sized club for him, although Simeone is kind of well-established there and seemingly going nowhere. So who knows? But I certainly think the days where Poch was the favourite for the Real Madrid job, as soon as it became vacant, are probably behind him for now. And he might have to go and build, you know, another project somewhere else before those days return. He's only 50, so he's got time on his side. He's not old for a manager, but there was quite a significant comment in his post-match press conference last night where he kind of wistfully wondered out loud if he was sort of running out of time to win silverware. I think he said the players are still young, they've got plenty of time, in more time than me, and perhaps he senses that opportunities like yesterday, you know, against a team that had Klopp played it in the Carabao Cup fourth round, everyone would have said, that's a disgrace, stop taking the piss out of the competition. That was the level of team he was playing, but they still couldn't get over the line. And you know, he must know as well as anyone, you know, what a big opportunity missed that might be.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to get a better chance than that. And actually, Tom, let's just, you know, hopefully this will not happen, but obviously one or two people have been suggesting that Big Ange would be a good fit for Liverpool. If, for whatever reason, Postecoglou walked out on Spurs in the summer, is Pochettino now completely out of the reckoning to go back to Tottenham? Has he damaged his reputation to a degree that Spurs would definitely not consider him again?
It's a good question. I would imagine different fans would say different things. I guess the one kind of saving grace there is he hasn't really done anything really at Chelsea particularly. You know, there's no kind of lasting legacy there, no impact. The Chelsea fans haven't sung his name once, you know, and there has been no kind of connection built there at all between Pochettino and Chelsea yet, you know. So it's not as if, I mean, I would say that I don't think so. Like, I still think Pochettino kind of has some unfinished business at Spurs. Could I see him going straight from Chelsea to Tottenham quite like that? I don't think so. I think there'd have to be a little bit of water under the bridge in between. I always thought that the way Spurs would see Poch would kind of depend on what he did at Chelsea. If he stayed there for 5 years and created a huge thing and became a Chelsea man, then that's a different thing. As it stands, he's just sort of showed some vague signs of progress. But to be honest, you know, not a lot. I have to say that I think Chelsea would be mad to sack him. You know, I really do. Like, I still think Pochettino has a lot of value as a coach, and a lot of talent in this area in terms of building teams, moulding youngsters, creating a culture. I don't think there are many better managers in the world at those things. And this is exactly what Chelsea need. It's not Pochettino's fault that they've built a completely unbalanced squad full of players who basically aren't ready and aren't up to it. You know, I'm surprised he took the job. I'm not surprised Chelsea gave it to him. And I think they, you know, if they sacked Pochettino, then I think they would be in a much worse position with another coach, you know, next season.
And the irony actually is that up until the weekend, they were just starting to give signs, at least, that better days were to come. A couple of really good wins, well, at least one really good win in the FA Cup, and then they beat Crystal Palace, which they should have done in the league. But they were moving in the right direction, but a defeat like that hurts. And sometimes I think, I mean, personally, I look at certain managers, and this will sound harsh, but you feel, well, unfortunately, mate, you're a bit of a loser when it comes to finals, semi-finals, if it keeps on happening. And I know Klopp's had his disappointments in finals as well, but it never did happen with Pochettino at Spurs, and that golden opportunity has now come and gone at Chelsea. Dan, would you be happy to see Poch back as Spurs manager one day?
That's a big question, actually.
This is Dan, you know, he hates Harry Kane. He doesn't want to see Harry Kane win any trophies or anything. So he's got no sense of...
He has no forgiveness, does he, once people walk out of N17?
Once you betray Daniel Levy and the fraternity, you're sullied goods to me. It would all be about context. It's kind of hard to see now, I think. I think once Spurs decided in the summer that Poch wasn't their man, and on the back of that decision, Poch decided that he would go to Chelsea, it then became quite difficult, I think, to see that reunion that we all expected at some point happening. That's not to say it won't. I mean, definitely stranger things have happened. And I agree with Tom. If he kind of leaves Chelsea, let's say, in the summer, having not really made much of an impression on the club, then he wouldn't be totally kind of beyond going back. But, I do feel in the eyes of you know, a lot of Spurs fans. I think he is kind of damaged goods now. He's kind of made that call, and I don't know. I think a lot of supporters won't forgive him for it, no matter how it turns out for them. And I think, you know, as much as I was in favour of Poch coming back in the summer, I kind of hold my hands up now and say that the club and Levy got it right. You know, I think going with a completely fresh start was the right thing to do. And if Ange walks out in the summer or leaves whenever in a few years' time, I think there'll still be the case that, you know, it's not right to go back. I think that principle is kind of always going to hold true. So as much as Poch will have unfinished business at Spurs and we'll kind of always feel that, I imagine, the question will be, is it right for Spurs to kind of let him try and finish that business?
Sorry about that. That was Potts just ringing to ask what we're saying about him, but he'll have to wait until the podcast is released. Okay, well, it's an interesting one. It must really hurt, as Potts said afterwards. Spurs, or rather Chelsea, have got to feel the pain of that defeat. Well, I'm quite sure that they are. We will talk about Ange before we go when we look ahead to the Crystal Palace game. It's interesting, that defeat, which now seems a long time ago against Wolves, did prompt a fair degree of, I thought, unnecessary criticism against the big Aussie and whether he should have a plan B. And it's something that we've spoken about in the past. So we'll come on to that. But beforehand, the Allnut has given us a list. It's a 25-man list, the Tottenham squad, basically. And you want us to decide who should stay in it, who should leave it, and we'll have an opportunity to add to it. So just explain, if you could, what our little audit is all about here.
I like the Allnut. It sort of gives us a sense of like the Oracle or something, you know, like real, really empowered there. The game here is we go through the players one by one. You have to decide whether it's in or out in the summer, i.e. we keep or we sell. And at the end, you get 100 million to spend. You can spend it however you like on as many players or one player if you want. But the catch is you're only getting 50 million from Daniel Levy. So you have to raise 50 million through your outs. And that's it. The one wild card you get one pass. So you get one pass, which is your cool Fabio card. Where basically at any point you can say, not really sure here. I'm going to call Fabio Paratici and say, listen, I've got Ben Davis, for example. How much can we get for him? Is there a young left centre half at Roma who we could replace him with quickly, etc., etc.? I.e., it basically depends on factors, depends on circumstances. But you only get one of those. So only one player can you basically sit on the fence. And everyone else is in or out, ask Fabio, and then spend your 100 million at the end.
All right. Okay, it's good. Well, let's rattle through these names, because some of them I think we will be passing straight across. I mean, I'll just say the name. If one of you wants to sell him or whatever, just butt in or I'll move on to the next name. A Vicario. Clearly going to go nowhere.
In.
Yeah. Fraser Forster.
Yeah, for me, I mean, Forster's an ideal kind of backup keeper, right? Like, he's apparently a very good trainer, very good guy to have around. I don't think he's that bothered about kind of playing in the first team. For me, ideal. In.
See, I have reservations about Forster, especially having watched Kelleher yesterday. I think if Vicario got injured for 3 months, Spurs would have a big problem. Forster can't play out with his feet. From what we've seen of him this season, that one game against Fulham, doesn't look the most kind of sprightly. So I think while he's been given a new contract because he's all those things Tom says, you know, dependable, a good trainer, a good person to have around, I think this season would be very up and down if he was the first choice keeper for 3-4 months. So while I will say in, I might use some of my budget to find a gem who can play out with his feet.
Yeah, it's of course, it's such an important requisite for a goalkeeper at the moment. Still gives me the heebie-jeebies. I know Kilpatrick says I'm an old man screaming at clouds when I bemoan the fact that we're always playing out from the back. But I still think we'll mention possible plan Bs, particularly Big Ange, if you're missing your two fullbacks at home to a side that presses really well, a.k.a. Wolves, then maybe something different could be attempted every now and then. But let's not jump the gun. Pedro Porro.
In.
Yeah, he's been one of the best right backs in the league in the season. Yeah, in.
Yeah, obviously, I'm going to concur and unless you hear otherwise. Emerson Royale now. What should happen to him?
Out for me.
How much are you thinking you're going to raise from that out, Dan?
Look, I think Emerson's got a lot of good qualities, and he's a bit of a cult hero, isn't he, as well? He's obviously a character and a good character. He's a good defender. I think he looked very good for a while in a Conte team against big sides, you know, City games stick in my mind. And he's done a job at times this season. But I think the Wolves game, which I wasn't at, by the way, but I've seen the highlights, and I've seen, you know, an extended highlights version with pretty much all of Wolves' chances, which seem to come from pressing Emerson. I don't think he's technically good enough to play for an end side. I don't think he's suitable for the inverted fullback role. And I think, more than anything, he's a kind of sellable asset. You know, Spurs just don't have many of them. They don't have many players who, well, we're about to go through the whole squad, but as you'll see, I think most of the players that Tom and I will kind of agree to get rid of aren't going to fetch a great deal of money or might even be out of contract very soon. Whereas he strikes me as someone, you know, who's done well in the Premier League, has proven himself at this level for a certain type of side and you know, could be sold for, I don't know, what was he bought for? 25 million? I think Spurs could get their money back. So I'm saying in this kind of fancy land, Don Fabio, you know, get him back to La Liga, get our money back, or find a lesser Premier League club who doesn't play quite such a technical game who might want him.
I think 25 million is quite optimistic. Maybe 20 might give you there, you know?
20 and Saudi. They were interested in
I would actually keep Emerson, and I take everything that Dan says, but assuming we can't kind of just, you know, get rid of everyone in the squad who, you know, we have slight asterisks about, I sort of think he's okay. You know, he's the kind of player I would say you might sell in the kind of second, whatever it will be, third summer, because, you know, he's versatile. He can play right back or right centre back. He's only 25. His personality, I think, is good for the squad. I think he's shown enough this season. It wouldn't, for me, be an emergency sell. I agree, if there was a good bid, if Al Etihad come in with a, you know, 40 million offer, then of course, but I personally wouldn't be rushing him out the door. In for me.
Yeah. Up until that Wolves game, I'd have probably gone with you, Tom, but if Ange is staying, Dan's absolutely right. He cannot play in that system. He had a shocker. And I don't blame him, because he came in, it was a really difficult fixture as well. But no, if we're going to be going with this system long term, then take, 20 million, whatever you can get for him. Romero's obviously staying, boys. I'm not even going to throw that question at you. Now, Dragusin, we've hardly seen anything of him yet. So presumably he's not up for discussion at this stage.
It'd be pretty harsh to sell him, I think, after 2 or 3 games.
Be very harsh, based on like 11 minutes of 3 cameo performances. You're out, mate. And Van de Ven, clearly, we will never let him go anywhere, ever. Just give him a 20-year contract now, quicker than Usain Bolt. What more can you say? Now, you've touched upon Ben Davis, who, again, one of these players that I've always felt Dan's got a... We know when we come on to Højbjerg that he'll be particularly withering. I thought we've always been a bit harsh about Ben Davis. Again, he had to come in for that Wolves game. I thought he did okay in the circumstances. I don't know how old he is now, but again, how much money, realistically, can you expect to get for Ben Davis these days?
Well, yeah, that's it. I'd actually keep Davis. I don't know if I have been harsh on him. That's kind of news to me. I mean, I know how you feel, I feel about Højbjerg, but I've always thought I had a soft spot for gentle Ben.
Oh, sorry. I may have cast an aspersion that should not have been cast. I retract that. I'm sure once upon a time you said something pretty nasty about him, but anyway.
Okay. Well, maybe he had a bad game. I'll be really careful what I say about Davis from now on. But no, I like him. He's obviously like a great character and, yeah, a lovely human by all accounts. So I'm not, you know, convinced that he's a kind of long-term sort of solution for either the left centre-back backup spot or the left-back spot. Again, for similar reasons, really. He doesn't look ideal at inverting, but I think he's done better when he's filled in both those roles than kind of Emerson has on the opposite side. He's obviously an intelligent player. That there was a point when he was playing centre-back just before Van de Ven came back that you were kind of wondering, hold on, has he been playing out of position all these years? Because he was looking so assured as the kind of left centre-back. So, you know, I'd definitely keep him. I also think, you know, he's just not the kind of player you're going to raise a lot of money for. I mean, he's a very experienced Premier League player, but I kind of struggled to see anyone paying kind of significant money for Ben Davis. So I would definitely be keeping him. I think he's a good member of the squad, and Ange obviously likes him.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he can play left back or left centre. He's obviously not perfect at left back, but I just think as well, Spurs do lack some leadership these days, having kind of got rid of four or five pretty big players. And I think he's a sort of steady Eddie in this squad. I think his contract is out in 2025. So I would be surprised that just, I would imagine they'll just be kind of letting that run down and then he can head off back to Wales or something to kind of finish off his career.
I mean, Tom, you're such a nice guy, but you're going to have to get rid of somebody sooner or later. Otherwise, you're going to have a very, very bloated squad next season. Continuing down the list again, Udogie, he's not going anywhere, is he? Please don't let him go. I know he's had a couple of games where he hasn't quite been at his best, but what an exciting youngster he is. And poor old Ryan Sessegnon, you know, he got injured again playing, was it behind closed doors or certainly playing in an under-23 match, I think it was. Was it another hamstring injury different to the previous one? Is he ever going to be fit again? What, Dan, do we do with Ryan Sessegnon?
Yeah, I mean, I think Sessegnon should go and probably will go. I just think he, as much as anyone, would benefit from a fresh start. You know, he's had such a rotten time with injuries at Tottenham. He's had this hamstring surgery now. There was a lot of interest in him in the summer before he had the hamstring surgery. He's obviously got like a body of work behind him at Fulham, which was very impressive. And he did okay, at Spurs in some games, even last season. You know, Conte really liked him. So there's something there. I hope he gets a good move and can kind of get fit again. But I don't think he's got a future at Spurs. I know there's been a question of, could he be the Udogie understudy, inverting from left back, but I don't see it. I think he needs a fresh start.
Yeah, I feel like Sessegnon's one of those kind of players who you feel a bit sorry for everyone. Like I can see why Spurs went for him. You know, he's kind of the perfect profile for them. You know, attacking left back, did some really, he was very good at Fulham, and had a whole kind of career ahead of him, and it just hasn't really worked out for him in terms of his fitness and his injuries and. Yeah, I agree with Dan. I think he needs a fresh start. How much do you think they could raise for him? I mean, maybe 10, 15?
I think that might be optimistic, but yeah.
It could be more of a sort of a loan with an option, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if we can give ourselves any funds from selling Sessegnon.
Well, listen, actually, he's an easy target and I feel sorry for him because, it just hasn't worked. And we won't go through what we said before about a player who seems to have lost lots of confidence, et cetera, is, as you said, boys, he has got a good body of work. And yeah, hopefully he can go somewhere else, just rediscover that belief. Now, Bissouma's had an up and down sort of season, but we're happy. I thought he was showing glimpses since returning from the Africa Cup of Nations that he's going to rediscover that early season form, guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a keep for Bissouma. He's been really up and down really since he was sent off in that Luton game, which was way back in autumn. So it kind of feels like almost a frustrating season in that it was so promising in the first kind of 7-8 games that you wondered if he was, potentially going to be sort of PFA player of the year type candidate because he was just running games. So with that kind of context, he's fallen off a little bit. But I think, clearly he showed what he can do, if only briefly. I still think he's the best fit to play that kind of number six or that deepest midfield role. For Spurs, he's the kind of most press resistant. Bentancur works better slightly higher up. So, yeah, I think it's got to be a keep for Bissouma.
Yeah, Bissouma, definitely. Definitely keep. I mean, he's had a bit of an up and down season, but he's so important. And I think we've seen that no one can quite perform the role like he does, So, yeah, definitely staying.
Okay, now the next three names, I think two, definitely for me, are on their way out. And I'm not sure about the third one. But first of all, Højbjerg, obviously, Dan, we know your thoughts. I mean, I'll say it again. I think he's a wonderfully professional footballer. He does what's asked of him. He does it without creating a fuss. And I think he could still have a big role to play towards the end of this season. But clearly, long term, he's going to go. How much money can we get for him, though? That's the issue.
He'll have 1 year left in the summer, so you're not looking at really big money, but he's obviously a experienced player. He's very established at the Premier League. There was interest from big clubs, you know, Atletico, I think Juve have expressed an interest. So, yeah, 15 million, does that seem about right? 20 million?
Yeah, I'd written 10 to 15 just because his contract's almost up. But then, yeah, because of what he can do, perhaps a little bit more. And again, I guess it depends who goes in for him. Tom, I know you think Højbjerg's done as well. Is Lo Celso done? I mean, we keep hoping that the fifth coming is going to work and he's fit again now, but enough's enough, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think this was the kind of the season that Lo Celso had to really deliver at Tottenham. And there were signs, you know, early on that maybe it could kind of work. But am I right in saying now that Ange kind of said he had an injury or was he ill early on in the season? I can't quite remember what happened, but it was, you know, so where's Lo Celso? And he said, well, you know, it's not just I'm not picking him. You know, he had a very disrupted start to the season and that's just really not what he needed. Like Lo Celso really needs to kind of hit the ground running, be at it in pre-season, right in the team from the off. And he just a bit like Sessegnon almost, you know, you kind of think it's just not going to happen at Tottenham. You know, he's never fit enough for long enough. And it always just comes in glimpses. You know, we've seen what he can do and what he could be, but just nowhere near often enough. And I think he still has a market in Spain. You know, I still think in Spain there are clubs that would love to have him who know what he has done in the past. And I think Spurs could maybe get sort of, I don't know, 20 million maybe for him, possibly 25 million. I wouldn't be surprised if it's kind of a loan with an obligation or something like that, you know, but maybe we can put it down in our balance sheet about 25 or something like that. I mean, it's a shame because I really like Lo Celso. I think he has got something as a player, but he just, whether it's the Premier League or whether it's Tottenham, it just hasn't worked out for him. And I suspect it will be the end in the summer.
Yeah, he's also going to have a year left in the summer. So I think 25 might be optimistic. Spurs might have to cut their losses a little bit. But I mean, one thing we can say that Ange's kind of policy of not freezing anyone out and giving everyone a fair crack has done is it's certainly given certain players a market value again. And Lo Celso had almost no market value under Conte because Conte was so desperate to be rid of him and Spurs were just looking for loans and looking to get him out of the club. And that won't be true in the summer. He'll have done okay this season, whatever happens. You know, he's had a couple of really bright games where he's been decisive. So he's shown what he can do. He feels like another kind of sellable asset to me. Spurs don't have many of them. So I would definitely be thinking offload him in the summer. And Barca have been long-term interested. Whether that changes with Xavi going or their financial situation allows for it, I don't know. But he should be a player, I suppose, are looking to move on, I think.
Yeah, and don't forget the Tom philosophy here. We're going to have £100 million to spend, or that's what we want to spend at least in the summer. Daniel Levy's going to give us 50 million, so we've got to raise 50. If we get the 20 for Lo Celso, there or thereabouts, about 15 for Højbjerg, that takes us up to 35. And if we get 20 for Emerson, well, then we're almost, we are there. Basically, we've got our 55 million so far with others who could possibly go as well. I'm not sure about this next one because he's done some great things or some good things. He's a Spurs man. But does Oliver Skip have a long-term future or would he be better off finding fresh pastures, Mr. Kilpatrick?
So Skip is my cool Fabio. Skip's the sort of one player in the squad I'm not too sure about. I think he's a cool Fabio because I think he's useful in that he's homegrown and it's always nice to have that connection with the academy as well and Spurs need a certain number of homegrown players. But I think if Fabio or indeed anyone who actually works full-time for Tottenham could rustle up a replacement who is a better player and ideally homegrown as well. You know, if Spurs could, say, sign Gibbs White, they felt that was possible, and sell Skip to kind of help fund that move, then I would do it. Or even Conor Gallagher, who seems like the kind of more obvious one. They've also been linked to Jacob Ramsey, I think. All these players feel like they would be a kind of upgrade on Skip. But I think Skip's a decent enough player. I still don't think we've quite seen the best of him. He's never really had a consistent run, at least not under a progressive manager like Postecoglou. So I wouldn't be desperate to offload him. But given the kind of English tax on players as well, you could probably get fairly decent money for him. So he would be my, I'm not sure at the moment.
I would keep Skip. I know that there's not a huge swell of support for him at the moment, but I actually think he has value as a homegrown player, particularly if Spurs are playing Europe next season. They're going to need that. They're actually quite short of players who qualify under that rule. And B, I think, not even just sort of logistically, but I actually think psychologically that I feel like Spurs need players like Skip. That there's a slight danger, particularly when you're playing this game, to kind of like throw out everything with the bathwater. And actually, you know, he is someone who kind of understands the club, in inverted commas. You know, he kind of does tap into that thing of you know, homegrown academy players. And Spurs used to have that in spades, but actually these days it's much, much rarer than it used to be. And I accept that he's not, you know, the spectacular player, but I think he's a squad player. I actually think players like Skip do have value, and I would hold on to him.
Yeah, I think I would as well. But equally, you know, if you could get good money for him, I know we're looking to have £100 million to spend in the summer. To be absolutely honest, I think we need to be spending more than that. In my eye, come the summer, and we'll come on to the man I'm going to be asking Fabio about shortly, but I do think we need another striker. I think we need another creative presence if Maddison gets injured again. And I think we need another fullback, preferably one that can play either on the left or right. But certainly, you know, if we lose one of our fullbacks, or God forbid, both of them, as we did for the Wolves game, and they're so important in the Postecoglou system, I think that's an area as well. So if somebody said to me, oh, well, you know, you can get 55 million or something for Skip, then I think, although I like him, I would shake his hand and say good luck.
So, Marcus, to be clear, are you calling Fabio there or not? Are you pressing the buttons or?
No. I'm not calling. I should be calling Fabio in just a moment, Tom. I am certainly not calling Fabio over Maddison. I'm assuming you both agree that Maddison and Saar are staying put. And also, I know that Benton Kerr, since coming back from injury, hasn't been quite as good as he was, but he fits the system in so many different ways. So I'm assuming that Benton Kerr and Kulusevski, boys, are not under discussion. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, for me, Kulusevski is getting a slightly undue amount of stick at the moment. I always think Kulusevski's performances on the pitch his output in terms of goals and assists and creativity can fluctuate, but with Kulusevski you always know you're going to get a real wave of effort and intensity, and I think there are certain players in pressing teams that you need to set the tone and to set the press, you know, and I think Kulusevski is that man. You know, for Arsenal it's, for example, you know, Jesus, Alvarez does it at City, and I think Kulusevski is a really important part of that for Spurs. And I get that he hasn't been sometimes at his kind of lethal best, but I think he's still a really key player for Spurs. And it surprises me when people kind of pick him out and say he's, you know, way below what we need or whatever. You know, I think Kulusevski is a real asset for Tottenham. Yeah.
And actually, Dan, every time I see him playing and maybe struggling a bit, I think of you, because you always make the point that he's a lot younger than I think most. You look at him and he must be sort of 28. He looks old before his time. But what is he? He's still early 20s, isn't he?
He's 23, I think. But yeah, I wouldn't be touching Bentancur or Kulusevski. I think they're both great characters and really good players.
Okay, which brings us on to the man I am asking Fabio about. Because although he's been scoring lots of goals recently and he works 100%, you know, you can't question his ethic. I like him a lot. But bottom line, having watched the last couple of games again, is that for me, Richarlison is not quite good enough for the lofty ambitions we have. So I'm prepared to sell Richarlison, but I need to ask Fabio. And again, I'm thinking, so if we can get about 60 million for Richarlison, something like that, we should almost get our money back, I think, because he's shown over the last few months what he can do.
Who are you hoping is going to pay the 60 million there, Marcus?
Well, we could probably hoodwink Chelsea into doing it for a start. I mean, I don't know. But I think somebody will be interested in Richarlison. But I need to ask Fabio, who comes in, which striker is out there who will work the system, be able to deal with all the opportunities that are going to come their way, has got the touch, the mobility, everything that is required. I don't know if you guys would have a suggestion, but that's who I go to Fabio for information on.
So you're selling Richarlison for 60 to Chelsea, and you are asking Fabio for a replacement?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, sounds pretty sound, to be honest. I would hold on to Richarlison, actually. I have to say, like, I don't rule out him being a kind of second, third year sale for Ange. I suspect maybe further down the line, he's not going to be a long-term hold for Ange. But I think at this stage, it's a pretty luxury move for Spurs to move out Richarlison when we presume he's probably going to finish with, what, 15 goals? I don't know what he's on at the moment. Maybe he's on about 10, 11 or something. So he's probably going to get somewhere in the high teens, which actually is a decent return, you know. And I know it's been an emotional roller coaster for everyone concerned, but actually, okay, it's not Harry Kane, but he's been pretty good. And if Spurs are kind of lacking firepower and goals and threat, which I personally think they are, I don't think they can be getting rid of players who are scoring that kind of amount of goals. It's not perfect, but I think it's one for sort of further down the line.
That strikes me as the right answer, the sort of sensible answer. But in this fantasy game, I think I'm probably selling him and I'm siding with Marcus. I'm doing the calling Al Ittihad or whatever and trying to get 50, 60 million for him. Because I think on the last poll we did, Tom, a couple of weeks ago, you kind of hit the nail on the head and articulated it in a couple of words, which is, you know, 13 or 14 clubs in the Premier League would be happy with Richarlison, but 6 or 7 wouldn't. And I think Spurs are in that bracket of clubs that wouldn't and kind of shouldn't be happy with him. He's not quite at the level, the kind of elite level of finisher that I think a Postecoglou team needs. And while your answer, as I said, is probably the right one, I think in Football Manager, you're sort of trying to bring in someone who looks better on paper. So I'll go with that for now.
It probably does depend on offers. I agree with that. Like, I think it probably does depend. If someone comes in and offers, you know, Spurs their money back this summer, then I would be, you know, I think they'll take it. But, I doubt they'll get that offer.
I'd just like to point out that this whole exercise is the all-nuts idea, and that we've got to raise at least £50 million in this fantasy game.
I've raised loads more than that. I've raised about
£100 million. Yeah, at the moment, Tom's raised a fiver for Sessegnon, and that's it. He's the only one that's leaving, and there's only a few names left. So I don't know. I'm waiting for something special here. Obviously, I suspect that Mr. Gil is on his way, but he's not exactly going to make us a rich club, is he?
Well, you're selling Marcus Emerson and Richarlison both to Al Ittihad for something like 100 million or something. You know, it's not my fault I don't have the same connections that you do with Emin Arlo in Saudi Arabia. You know what I mean? I am selling Sessegnon, Højbjerg and Lo Celso at the moment. I'm on a cool 50 million. Oh. You know?
Okay, I've forgotten you've gone for those two, yeah. Okay. What are you doing with, I mean, Brian Hill, we love him, but we all know it's not for him, this Premier League, is it?
No, I think Brian, similarly to Lo Celso, you know, I think this was the season when we kind of thought with Ange, maybe he could kind of unlock the Bernardo Silva that Conte claimed was inside, but we just haven't seen it. And again, I think there's a nice technical player in there somewhere, but I think he needs to be playing for a sort of mid-table club in Spain rather than a top four team in the Premier League.
Now, we've got 5 more names, one of whom is an absolute shoo-in. The next one, though, already, he's only played half a dozen matches, but real mixed opinions about Timo Werner. Dan, is it too early to make a definitive judgment as to whether we should sign him after his loan period?
I'd forgotten about Werner. Which may tell its own story. I mean, the thing about Werner is he's literally on trial, isn't he? I mean, Spurs have a try before you buy, which they're currently going through, and we haven't seen all the evidence yet. If at the end of the season he's got a few goals and a few more assists, then 15 million will look like quite a decent price. And if at the end of the season he hasn't, then I think they'll consider that money could be spent better elsewhere. If he carries on the trajectory he's on, i.e. being a decent round peg in a round hole, contributing but looking very toothless, then I would probably prefer Spurs to spend that money elsewhere and maybe look for someone else who could, you know, have more upside than Werner. It just looks like with Werner we're kind of getting exactly what we expected to get, which isn't to say, you know, it's a totally bad thing, but you know, he said himself he's not the man to rely on to score goals, and I think for where Spurs are going and where Spurs want to be, you know, they can't have a player in the front three who's not kind of scoring and really contributing. So I think the jury remains out, and you know, literally we will have to judge him on the next few months. But as it stands, he's just about in the kind of no category for me.
Yeah, and for me, Tom?
I would call Fab about this, to be honest, because I sort of think, I mean, I'm very cold on Werner generally, I have to say, but what Spurs have an option to buy him for 15 million, I think, in the summer. And I mean, you're probably doing quite well to get for 15 million a player who can do what he does. And that's not me saying he does anything spectacular, but to deliver kind of 6 and 7 out of 10 performances, can be a threat off the bench, you know, gets a fair amount of assists, if not so many goals. If Fab can you know, dip into the lower reaches of Serie A and get me a 15 million winger like Werner, who's 2 or 3 years younger, then I'm happy to do that trade. But I think actually Spurs are so light in this kind of area of the pitch, you know, they actually haven't got that many options. I sort of think having the depth there with players like Werner for the cups to come off the bench, I think actually I would probably keep him.
You know, I'd like to be proved wrong about Timo Werner, because he comes across as a top bloke, and he wants to be successful. Maybe if he scores, maybe if he gets a goal against Crystal Palace at the weekend, suddenly the confidence will come flowing back. And there is there's a very good player inside of him. So I'm prepared to be persuaded, but at the moment I'd have to side with Dan. Johnson, of course, we're not going to even bother talking about. I know I wanted to have been harsh on him, but I think he's going to be a great signing. The one I'm intrigued to see playing, and he's the forgotten man, aside from Sessegnon this season, because he got injured so early on, is Manus Solomon. But he's close to fitness again. I mean, if Solomon hits the ground running, we won't really need Werner, will we? I mean, I still don't know what Solomon's best position is, but he's quick, he can play wide, and he can score goals down as well, can't he?
Yeah, I mean, he's a bit of an unknown quantity, isn't he, Solomon? I mean, he's been injured since October. Seemingly had another small operation recently after a setback. So I imagine from what Ange said recently that he's pretty close to getting back to fitness, but we just haven't seen enough of him to judge him. So I think you have to say keep him. But I mean, one thing to say about Solomon is he was a free transfer. It was a kind of, depending on how you look at it, a sort of clever or kind of slightly backhanded bit of business from Spurs to get him from Shakhtar in those circumstances after a loan at Fulham. We did okay. So whatever Spurs sell him for, or if they were to sell him, would be a profit and would make him a kind of canny bit of business. So I don't think that option can be ruled out. You know, if they sign a couple of wingers in the summer, which I think is definitely a possibility, and they then get a good bid for Solomon, I wonder. But I think as it stands, I have to say keep, because I just haven't seen enough of him, and it would be very harsh to say sell.
Yeah, it would be a strange one. Two names left. Tom, you're not going to say something outrageous here and decide to sell Sonny, are you?
that would be quite something. No, I think Sonny stays, of course. I suspect he might get a new deal soon, because he has an option, doesn't he, to extend his current contract. But there are whispers that maybe he's going to get a new contract that will not so much improve his years, although I guess there will be 1 or 2 extra years, but his pay, because he is now the kind of standout talisman of the club. So I think they will probably extend his deal in the not too distant future. But yeah, Son definitely stays.
Which just leaves us with young Mr. Scarlett, who I've not seen much of, Dan, but I hear good things. I don't know whether closer to the ground you know more about his likely short-term future, long-term future?
I don't know. I mean, he's been shafted a little bit in that he played in the League Cup and then he went on an unsuccessful loan to Ipswich, so he couldn't go out on loan again, which I think would have been the ideal for him in the second half of the season. He certainly was extremely highly rated at Spurs. I mean, I guess one thing to consider is, will he be overtaken by Valise? I don't know how Valise is getting on in Spain, actually, Tom. Can you shed any light on that? Has he played for Sevilla at all?
Not much yet, I don't think. No.
Right, okay. Well, that they kind of feel on a fairly even kilter, don't they? So I guess at the start of pre-season, they'll be sort of competing to be the third or fourth in line to be centre forward. And then there's a guy in the academy, Will Lancashire, who's scoring loads and loads of goals, and I wonder whether he sort of comes into the mix. So it feels like it will be a big season for Scarlett next season. You know, he might go out on loan, he might stay at Spurs, but he's got to kind of start playing games and I guess start taking the first steps toward fulfilling the potential that kind of Mourinho was very clear about when he gave him his debut a few years ago.
Yeah, okay. Some of the other younger players, we're not going to touch on the Donnellys of this world, the Valises as well, because they're here unless something extraordinary happens. So we've run the rule over 25, and at the end of all that, it would appear that we are getting rid of about eight. Forster, Emerson, Sessegnon, Højbjerg.
Hold on, no one wanted to get rid of Forster.
Well,
I just said stick him at number three.
Well, I agree that he, you know, with a lack of footwork, I'm not sure that he is the answer. But, well, he might go. But definitely Emerson, Sessegnon, Højbjerg, Lo Celso, maybe Skip, maybe Richarlison. And then one or two other ifs and buts, and maybe somewhere between six and eight, which will definitely get you your 50 million. And then if you've got your other 50 million, the issue now becomes who is the priority. And I've made it very clear, I think another striker. And surely if Lo Celso's going, guys, we do need another very creative midfield presence. Or, you know, somebody like, I don't know. I mean, obviously everyone's talking about Pedro Neto as well. Are there a couple of obvious signings that Spurs should make this summer?
Yeah, I mean, with my 100 million, which I've very carefully raised, and I'm very politely asking Daniel for an extra 50, I think Spurs need to prioritise the forward options. So, I mean, I think in this budget, and, you know, maybe there'll be two or three extras, but I think their key additions here have to be one or two signings up front. And I think they could either go for a sort of premium centre forward and a slightly kind of more up-and-coming winger maybe, or vice versa. So I'm going to spend the bulk of my 100 million on, let's say, Neto for 60 million. And then I was sort of thinking more of a kind of up-and-coming forward. I quite like Cunha, you know, at Wolves. I don't know if you get him for cheap, but I think he's got something. He's very physical, fast, strong. He's injured now, but Ferguson at Brighton would be good, although you wouldn't get him cheap. So, and obviously you've got someone like Nusa, you know, who they were interested in. Rafinha, very much kind of interesting a lot of Premier League clubs, I think, this summer. So those would be my kind of players. And I guess you'd have to interchange. So you might go for someone like Neto for 60, and then you have to get someone like Cunha for 30. and then I think I would also then strengthen personally the left-back position, because I think if you're getting rid of Sessegnon, you haven't got Perisic. I don't think Spurs can rely on Ben Davis as their first change at left back. So I'd bring in a sort of young left back. I would ask Fabio for advice, but maybe someone, I mean, Alejandro Balde at Barcelona, for example, need the money, very good young player, just give him 10 million and take him the next Jordi Alba. Maybe Alfie Doherty at Luton, for example, something like that. Young attacking, 20 million and on we go.
If Maddison gets injured again, I know we've got the boy wonder joining us next summer, but for me there, Tom, you've got too many strikers and wingers. What are you going to do with them all?
No, I mean, I think Spurs' best position now is midfield. You know, they've got Bissouma, Bentancur, Saar, Maddison. They've got options in there, you know, and I'm keeping Skip, remember. And I think, you know, that's a good collection there of midfielders. I personally, at the back, I think they're not bad. I think they've got Van de Ven, Romero, obviously, they've got Davis and Dragusin. That's a good quartet. You know, there are, you know, this isn't Manchester City. I, you know, accept that in a couple, you know, in second year, third year, there are more alterations to be made. But I think the priority this summer really has to be up front, you know. And I just think Spurs look that, if you compare Tottenham to Liverpool and City and even Arsenal, that is the biggest gap. You know, I wouldn't necessarily trade Tottenham's midfield for Liverpool's, you know, but I 100% would trade Liverpool's probably four or five of their strikers for Tottenham. You know, Son is the only one who gets anywhere near it, if I'm honest. And I think that is the area where Spurs want to go from being a fourth, fifth team to being a sort of top two or three team. And in Europe as well, those wing positions particularly, I think, are absolutely crucial.
Danny Boy, where's your priority?
I had written down Neto and Cunha as kind of two players that Spurs could target. I think they're both really good. Look, I've sold so many people that what I need is... I need a new fullback who can play both sides and is really comfortable and can invert, and that's going to be hard to find, and I don't have any solutions. If this was football manager, I'd be putting kind of some criteria into my search engine saying they can play right and left and they've got good technique and good positioning and that kind of thing. So I'll be asking Fabio on that one. I think it's unusual for both fullbacks to kind of be ruled out, isn't it? And if they are, like against Wolves, I think Davis can do a job, and then the new guy plays on the right. I like the idea of this kind of pressing goal-scoring midfielder that Spurs have been linked with for a while. Obviously, Gallagher is the big name. I mean, just watching him at Wembley yesterday, you know, it's clear to me that he would be the guy kind of getting on the end of Madison's cute passes. You know, there was a couple of times where Palmer, I think, kind of fed him through and he sort of burst into space, and he probably should have scored. He's still kind of a bit unpolished, but I do like Conor Gallagher, and I know sort of Jacob Ramsey's been mentioned as well.
If they had Gallagher, Dan, where would he... If they had Gallagher and they were playing Arsenal tomorrow, what would be your first choice midfield three? I mean, does he get in Tottenham's team? I personally not sure he does.
I think probably he doesn't, but I mean, you have got the option of playing Madison in the front three, for example, and then, you know, does he come into one of the number eight slots next to Saar? I think, yeah, we've said it many times in this pod, but you don't really want to be thinking in terms of a first 11, especially if Spurs are going to be in the Champions League or at least in Europe next year. There's going to be a lot of games and you're going to need a lot of options. And I think if Lo Celso's going, then Gallagher or someone of a similar profile sort of strikes me as someone Spurs would need to sign, particularly if Højbjerg and maybe Skip as well are going to leave on top of that. So I do think that's an area Spurs need. I've also sold Richarlison, so I need a centre-forward again. There's no one kind of obvious I can think of in the Premier League. I would need Fabio and Johan to come up with some names for me. And
this is the problem with you guys, you know, you've sold half the squad and you're now bothering Fabio. You know, you're only meant to get one call the whole summer, and you're nitpicking away at him every night, you know. Forster's upset because I've said that he can't kick, you know, I've got to get another goalkeeper and I've got to get another striker, you know, like it's just bad planning, man.
Well, we're demanding, and that will bring success. Just because you're cuddly, Tom, oh, you can all stay, and we'll find room for you all. Here's a blanket for your position on the bench all season. Okay, well, I think Dan and I are of a similar ilk in that certainly it'll need some sort of big name midfield player to come in to replace the likes of Lo Celso, et cetera, et cetera. Just before we go quickly, Crystal Palace at the weekend, they got a new manager. They got off to a winning start, I think maybe with a little bit of fortune, because by all accounts, they were huffing and puffing against Burnley until the Clarets went down to 10 men. But a 3-0 win, I hear that Eze might be back. They have been unlucky in terms of injuries with Eze and Elise. Elise, by the way, is somebody, if he can stay fit, who I'd love to see at Tottenham. I think he's a fantastic player. Mark Gahey as well has been linked with Tottenham in the past, now being linked with Liverpool. I don't think he's going to be back for the weekend. So Palace should still be stretched in personnel terms. And guys, it goes without saying, I mean, thank goodness Manchester United slipped up when they did at the weekend. We've still got that 3-point cushion, but with some tougher games on the horizon, this is absolutely a must-win match. And personally, I think we'll win comfortably. I know, Dan, you don't like predictions, but if we can't see off an injury hit Crystal Palace, then we may as well pack up and go on our summer holidays now.
Well, yeah, that's probably fair. I mean, obviously, it's not what Spurs would have wanted. They wanted to play Palace in the kind of death throes of Hodgson's reign. They've got the new manager bounce. It worked very well for them, albeit against a Burnley side who looked like they kind of go down as kind of one of the worst ever Premier League teams. So difficult to judge Palace on the back of that. But yeah, they're going to have a new kind of spring in their step. But I think you're right. If Spurs can't beat them at home, then, you know, then that's a worry. But I think what is concerning is that the home form just hasn't been great. And, you know, there is this pattern of kind of lesser teams coming to the stadium, you know, Brentford, Burnley, Everton, and obviously Wolves most successfully, and just kind of frustrating. And I think Glasner was at the Wolves game, am I right? I saw some reporting to that effect. So, you know, he'll have done his research and he'll kind of know that, you know, this Spurs side still isn't really clicking in attack and, you know, has had trouble breaking down teams that, that play narrow and defend in numbers. So I think it will be a really tough game. And you know, Palace were good at that under Hodgson. You know, that was what they did. I think we saw that in the game at Selhurst Park, where you know they were tough to break down for a while. So yeah, I don't think it'll be easy, but I think you're right. It's, you know, it's one Spurs should be looking at. You know, as a kind of 3 points.
Which Tom brings me on to my last question, and Dan has made it clear that you know it's a non-negotiable tactic as far as Big Ange is concerned. This new lights out attacking system, which hasn't been very attacking of late, but the high line, all the rest of it. Should he have something else up his sleeve? I mean, for me, the Wolves game was the classic example of that. Gary O'Neill said afterwards he knew exactly how Spurs were going to play. They did, and he exploited it. And almost from the first minute of the game, you could see that Tottenham were in trouble, and Ange was powerless to do anything about it, or at least certainly he didn't do anything about it. So should he have a little tweak, something extra, if we get bogged down again against, you know, a team that is pressing us and defending well and frustrating us?
I mean, yes, I think is the answer, because you have to. Like, I think any top coach, you look at all the best managers and the best teams, they all have more than one way to play. But I would say it's more of a 1A, 1B, 1C than a 1, 2 and 3. You know, there are sort of overriding governing principles. But within that, maybe you can tweak players or formations or sort of emphases on where you attack and this kind of thing. I don't ever see Ange playing, you know, deep and counter-attack or playing long ball. And, you know, if that's what you're kind of thinking, then I just never see that. And I actually don't necessarily think that would be the right way anyway. We've discussed at length, you know, how, you know, there's the message, and then there's also the kind of bringing the players with you and the clarity of the message, which is so important, particularly at this stage. So I guess, you know, in some ways he does need to be flexible and versatile. But that doesn't necessarily mean surrendering everything that he believes in. And all that sounds a little bit wishy-washy, I guess. But I think the real test for Ange, I think, will be next season, because, excuse me, a lot of teams are going to start to know how Spurs play. You know, when a new manager comes in, you always get this sort of period of 6 months where everyone's kind of getting a feel for you. And now everyone has a lot of footage and a lot of data and a lot of analysis that they can do on Spurs, and they know what's coming, you know, and it won't be a surprise in the second half of the season that there will be opponents who cause a lot of problems. And that's going to be even more the case next season. And Arsenal found this season as well. You know, earlier on in the season, they suddenly found it difficult to break teams down because they basically had found Arsenal out in a way. And Arteta has had to adapt, and Postecoglou will have to show that he is capable of doing that as well. He can't just be a sort of one-trick pony. We play with this team this way and that's it. You know, you have to be able to tweak. And that doesn't mean, you know, playing Conte ball or playing a completely different way of football. But he does have to be able to adjust. And he might say, perhaps justifiably, that against Wolves, he doesn't necessarily yet have those kind of options on the bench. You know, he doesn't probably have a deep enough squad. I mean, who was he hoping to bring on? I mean, you know, he had Johnson, you know, Werner, Bentancur. I mean, you know, the good players. But I think he would hope next season that he has more options. I think this is a crucial period for Spurs. You know, this is a big game. I take Dan's point about the new manager bounce, but equally, I think Spurs would rather play Glasner's Palace tactically, a team that wants to attack, wants to get forward, wants to create a game, rather than Hodgson's, where everything was going to be, we sit behind the ball and let you have it for the whole game, and we sit deep and try and play for 0-0, you know. I actually think Spurs will quite enjoy a sort of pinball match against Palace, and I think they should win, and they need to, because they've also got that big match against Villa coming up. They're fortunate that Villa have to go to Ajax before that game, which I think will be a big excursion for them. But this is a really crucial period. Villa have got a difficult run in, but Spurs need to get tight to them, because that's a big gap, 5 points at the moment.
Final word from you, Danny, on the tactical possibilities at Big Ange's disposal. I know your philosophy is, oh, we're in this together. It's one way only, attack and then attack again. But come on, you've got to be a bit more crafty than that, haven't you?
I just don't know what you mean, really. What do you expect him to kind of put Llorente on and sort of go long for the last 10 minutes? I mean, I think, you know, Spurs are kind of in the development stage of of what Postecoglou is trying to do. And I'm not saying they should only have one approach to every game. Obviously, that's ridiculous. But, you know, top managers like Arteta, you know, with Klopp, Guardiola, you know, they have a way of playing. And their teams, you know, tend to stick to that and it tends to get results. Of course, they can, you know, have different tactical options and tweaks for different opponents. And Ange will have all that. But I don't think the kind of core principles of what he's trying to do, you know, the attacking football, the playing out, the, you know, outscoring the opponents, the kind of relentlessness are ever going to change. You know, that's his philosophy. So in that respect, I don't think he should kind of pivot and have a plan B. But as Tom says, you know, of course, we're, you know, hoping that as the project develops, Spurs will be, you know, more varied and have more weapons at their disposal and you know, be able to kind of hurt teams in sort of different ways.
Here's what I thought he could have done. I mean, these are fairly outlandish suggestions, but against Wolves, when you're missing your two fullbacks who are so important to you, and I think, well, I don't want to sound too clever, but I think we all knew that Emerson will really struggle in that system. So why not try playing Kulusevski at right back that afternoon? Why not bring in Dragusin, who I believe has played as a fullback before? The guy is not getting any minutes, and he won't if Van de Ven and Romero stay fit. So maybe see if he could have played maybe at left back, although Davis did okay. Could he have even just that afternoon? I know it's dramatic, but he's missing both the fullbacks. Could he not have gone to a three-man central defence just for that game and tweaked it that way? Those are the sort of things I'd quite like to have seen him try and do during this formative stage in his reign.
I think that's fair. And I think, you know, one thing we can say to Ange's credit, that, you know, this certainly wasn't the case under previous managers that had us all kind of banging our heads against walls, was that, you know, he has seemed to kind of learn from things that haven't worked. I mean, even in the first game of the season, when he played Emerson and Skip, you know, he corrected that for the second game, even though Spurs got a pretty credible point at Brentford, and then kind of stuck with Sarr and Porro, you know, from then on. I go back to the Wolves game, which was right after Spurs lost so many players against Chelsea, and he played Dier and then never played Dier again, and I think played Højbjerg as the most advanced midfielder and hasn't done that again. So he does tend to kind of learn, and I wasn't at the Wolves game, so I don't know kind of quite how bad it was. But if Emerson was kind of really as poor as he looked on the highlights and as people say, then, you know, perhaps we won't see him as an inverted fullback again. You know, perhaps Ange will learn from that and, you know, stick with him as a kind of understudy at centre half or play a slightly different way when Porro's out. And if Porro isn't fit for Palace, then you know, we might get an idea of whether, you know, Emerson's gonna kind of invert in that role again.
Yeah, it's interesting, and it's so easy, of course, to sit on the sidelines and make these suggestions. And if he had, maybe we'd have lost 5-1 against Wolves. But hopefully, he will show a few tweaks. And I think, and I've been saying this to a few people, I think we're due to put a lot of goals past somebody sooner rather than later. And without wishing to tempt fate, I think it's going to be this weekend. I think we're going to get 4 or 5. Fingers crossed. Tom Allnutt of The Times, thank you for your wonderful audit idea. Good luck with your squad of 120 for next season.
Well, to answer your question, Marcus, I'm bringing on Ferguson, Tony, Cunha, Rafinha and Neto, you know, next season when Spurs are struggling against Wolves. So, I don't know.
I like that. I like that. I do like that. I mean, we'd have gone bust, obviously, but, you know, that's fine. Okay, boys, thank you very much. That is Tom Allnutt of The Times, Dan Kilpatrick of The Evening Standard. I'm Marcus Buckland. Big one at the weekend, 3 o'clock Saturday afternoon, of course. Come on, you Spurs.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.